Hello, my name's Roger Watson, and welcome to the Jan podcast of 28th of May 2019. This is Roger Watson, the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Advanced Nursing, and I'm also the editor of Nursing Open. Evolving trends in open access. This is an article from the Compliance Alliance Journal in 2019, Volume 5, Number 1. With the growth of open access publishing, there's been a concomitant growth in the number of predatory publishers, and this article considers why open access has arisen and the various models under which it operates, before considering the nature of predatory publishers and what can be done to stop them. The article's divided into 7 sections. Background, what open access means, why open access models, funding models, predatory publishers and avoiding the predators. Background. Academic publishing used to be relatively simple. Scholars submitted manuscripts to a limited range of journals. If they were published, other interested scholars could read the work by visiting the university library and obtaining a copy which was paid for by the library. If a copy was not available, for a nominal fee, they could obtain the article from another library. Some academics subscribed to their own copy of a journal or obtained regular copies as members of academic societies or as editors and editorial board members. This model of publishing did not have a name, as it was the only model that existed. Some journals charged a fee to authors to submit their work, but these were rare, and the fee was for processing the article. Libraries still had to subscribe to these journals. This was the predominant model of academic publishing until well into the present century. The model is now referred to as pay-to-view, albeit that it's really the reader who's paying directly to view the article. It's hard to pinpoint exactly when, but around 2000, the concept of open access arose, and this referred to journals which made their content available free to the readers and to libraries. No subscriptions were required. There may always have been some journals operating like this model, but no systematic study exists to support this. Since around 2010, open access journals have become very common, and they operate under a range of models to be described. Due to pressure from various sources, open access has become a genuine competitor to the pay-to-view model, and for scholars wishing to publish their work, open access is now a major consideration. What open access means? Open access means that anyone can read a published article free of charge. The article becomes available as such because the publisher has sold the copyright of the article to the author. Therefore, open access can be expensive because the publisher is waiving, or should be waiving, the right to generate any further income from the articles that are available open access. Around the open access industry, a system of licensing to enable sharing but to offer some protection for authors and publishers has been developed, known as CCLs, Creative Commons licenses. And this also applies to other aspects of intellectual property, such as art or photographic images. The CCL system operates at several levels, but publishers using the open access route will normally specify which type of CCL they use to derive agreements with authors. Why open access? The pressure for open access publishing and the industry that's evolved around it comes from several sources, some laudable and some misguided. I consider the misguided to be those who see the rise of open access movement as a protest against and an alternative to the mainstream publishers, who they inevitably claim are making excessive profits. The extent of excessive is never defined. The fact that open access suites such as Biomed Central, BMC and the Public Library of Science, or PLOS, charge large amounts of money for their services is never considered. Nevertheless, the pressure on academics, universities and journals in Europe and Australia, not yet strongly visible in North America, to publish open access is extreme. Indeed, research councils and charities funding research in the UK make open access publication a requirement for outputs from projects they support. More formally, the Higher Education Funding Council for England, now Research England, and equivalent bodies in the remainder of the United Kingdom make open access compulsory for research outputs submitted for the Research Excellence Framework, the mechanism whereby universities in the United Kingdom receive research infrastructure funding. Otherwise, the pressure to publish research outputs open access comes from the general public, at least via pressure groups. on the basis that they largely fund the research that universities carry out, and therefore it should be available free for them to read. Another pressure point for open access comes from some academics and some universities, some of whom have broken ranks and made their publications available for anyone to read, who not only believe that the research should be thus made available, but who often cite excessive profits by the major publishing houses responsible for producing the majority of academic journals. The exact nature and extent of these excess profits is not specified, and the fact that, certainly in the United Kingdom, the academic publishing industry is a hugely successful export industry, with sales in 2016 of $1.1 billion employing thousands of people, is ignored. Producing journals by any means is not cost neutral, and open access fees, called APCs, article processing charges, are charged once only to the author, as opposed to recurring annual fees to readers via library bundles to offset loss of income for pay-to-view. Open access models. Open access is available in three ways, referred to as gold, green, and diamond. Gold open access is where the author covers the cost of publishing. This is also known as pay-to-publish, as opposed to the traditional pay-to-view. The cost in reputable journals can be considerable, several thousands of US dollars, and journals should, strictly speaking, make no further money from sales of the published articles. However, below I will consider the concept of double dipping. The green model of open access is one whereby the content of published articles can be made available, but rarely in the final published format, and normally only after a period of embargo, between 6 to 24 months, depending on the field of study and the publisher. Under the green open access model, the final accepted versions of manuscripts may be made available to read free of charge, and this is increasingly being done via university or research funding body repositories. The diamond model of open access, also referred to as the platinum model, is one where no money changes hands either to publish or to read. There are currently very few journals operating this model for obvious reasons. Funding models. From the funding perspective, journals can be described in three ways. Some remain totally dependent on pay-to-view, although few academic journals maintain this model and a comprehensive list is not available. But it does still appear to be an issue. Others are now completely open access, and this mainly applies to new journals developed specifically to be open access and to be funded by APCs. Notable amongst these and early adopters are the BMC and PLOS suites of journals. However, many journals once considered to be traditional journals, i.e. pay-to-view, have incorporated open access as part of their funding model, and these are described as hybrid journals. They published a combination of pay-to-view and pay-to-publish articles. In the process of submitting a manuscript, an author can indicate their preference and pay an APC. The APC should be paid once the article has been accepted and should not influence the editorial decisions about the manuscript. This is referred to as the gold route to open access. The practice of double dipping, whereby publishers were receiving income for open access and pay-to-view for the same copy, has largely been addressed. To provide value for money, publishers are annually adding copy to their journals equivalent to that paid for by open access. This means that pay-to-view customers receive the same number of articles. Therefore, very quickly, many in the academic publishing industry have responded as well as they can without incurring significant loss of income and the inevitable redundancies and closures of journals that this would necessitate. They've not responded by making their own copy instantly available open access. Largely, they have responded by allowing their copy to be available after an embargo period and only then in the final accepted copy. To facilitate the demand for open access publications, there's been a concomitant growth in the number and size of university online repositories to accommodate the volume of publications. This is referred to as the green route to open access. Predatory publishers. On the back of all these changes in academic publishing, we've seen the rise of so-called predatory publishers. The rise in the number of publishers and journals has been remarkable, from 18 publishers in 2011 to 923 in 2016, according to Beale's list, no longer available in its original form, of predatory publishers, and a more recent estimate puts this figure conservatively at 10,000. The definition of a predatory publisher used by Beale was, in academic publishing, Predatory open access publishing is an exploitative open access publishing business model that involves charging publication fees to authors without providing the editorial and publishing services associated with legitimate journals, open access or not. The combined pressure per se, the acceptance of online publishing and the pressure for open access publishing has provided a fertile environment for the rapid growth and predatory publishers. Predatory publishers operate by issuing a continuous stream of invitations by email to academic staff, inviting them to publish in one of their journals. Emails invariably open with inane greetings, an aspiration about how good your day is or about your health and happiness, and then the invitation. The invitations to publish vary from simply wanting an article to inviting you to edit a special issue or consider being an editor or an editorial board member, something to which I'll return. As if the wording and the nature of these emails was not enough to warn you of their intentions, then there are other obvious points. For example, they normally offer speedy peer review. This essentially means no peer review, because it's impossible to make the peer review process, if it is operated properly, speedy. The top journals from the best publishing companies struggle to offer a speedy peer review process, by which I mean one that doesn't take months. Finding ways to accelerate the peer review process has eluded us, and it's only possible by the predators if they're not doing it properly. There's a classic example of a paper with an obscene title and the obscenity repeated throughout that was published by a predatory publisher, thereby demonstrating that they neither reviewed the paper nor read it. Presumably those operating the publishing system do not speak English, and the nature of the emails and bizarre responses also suggests this. The predatory journals are invariably online and open access, and they offer ridiculously low APCs, or sometimes charge no APC. Some predatory journals advertise impressive impact factors, but these are undoubtedly fabricated. An additional twist to the predatory journals is their invitation to edit special issues, which is a way of getting you to do their work and to join editorial boards. When the invitation to join a board doesn't work, there have been reported cases where they add your name anyway, and it can be hard to have your name removed. Avoiding the predators. The best defence by academics in avoiding predatory publishers is the application of common sense. If in doubt, don't. Never respond to emails of invitations to publish in a journal. If you want to publish, you select the journal. Universities could do more to protect their staff and to help starve the predatory publishing industry of funds. Universities could lever this in two ways: providing information and censoring staff who do publish in predatory journals. Information should be both general and specific. Generally, staff induction and continuing professional development should include training in good publishing practices. Beyond that, universities could oblige subject areas to draw up regular lists of acceptable journals. These not all be high impact factor journals. Nevertheless, the Thomson Reuters impact factor list and the Emerging Sources Index would be good starting points, merely because of the quality indicators and good practice that must be evident before inclusion. Beyond universities, research councils and university funding bodies, especially in Australia, Hong Kong and the UK, where research assessment exercises are conducted, could discount any outputs appearing in predatory journals from eligibility. And international bodies, such as the Times Higher Education, which rank universities, could ask for evidence of policies related to predatory journals. These measures may seem extreme, possibly unworkable and harsh on individuals. It's impossible to know what the profits of the predatory publishers are. They're like hydra-headed monsters. However, any amount of money spent on them, and any extent to which the reputation of an individual or an institution is debased, is too much. Something must be done.
This podcast was produced in association with youthpublicationslimited.com. Do, 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 do.